Today I'm speaking to the Liberal Democrat MP for Epsom and Yule, Helen Maguire. Starting off with the new Prime Minister, Andy Burnham. We have got a new Prime Minister since we last spoke. What's your assessment of his government so far, albeit he hasn't been in for long, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so, I mean, at the moment, Andy Burnham seems to be saying all the right things. I think the real test is going to be when Parliament is back. He's obviously bringing in some fresh energy and some new ideas, and it's really good to hear that he wants to work with other parties on social care. This is something that we as Liberal Democrats have been banging the drum on for many years, so we're delighted that he's talking about that. It's also really good to see that his first foreign visit was to Ukraine. And it's important that he's recognising how fundamental the security of Europe and the UK is. So that's really good to hear. But I think ultimately the real test is going to be when he gets back to Parliament after recess.
Now, as you just mentioned, he's made the NHS and social care priorities. What would you most like to see him change?
So, I mean, as we know, social care is one of the reasons why we have so many challenges in the NHS at the moment. We have a huge amount of bed blocking, and so many patients are just unable to leave hospital at the moment because they don't have a place in social care, and often because there's negotiations about who's going to pay for that social care. So we need to make sure that there is a fluid movement of patients coming from hospital into social care. But what we've done is we've put to Andy Burnham a few tests for social care, and what we're saying is that it's really important that we put family carers at front and centre with the carers allowance and respite support, that there's an offer of free universal personal care, and also a cap on care costs.
And as we know, he's been in Ukraine and has agreed a new UK-Ukraine partnership on AI and drone technology. Do you support that?
Yeah, and you know, and it's really good to see him chairing the coalition of the willing in Kyiv, and that's a really positive step. And we're really pleased to see that they've now come to this agreement over the blueprints for the UK-French Scalp missile. Again, this is really important because, unfortunately, recently, you know, we've all seen on TV how much the Ukraine has suffered from the long-range missiles coming into Kyiv, and they simply don't have that protection. So now, actually, being able to produce it domestically is going to be really helpful, and that's really going to support Ukraine. But one of the things that we need to make sure now is that in addition to this support to Ukraine, that we also see an increase in defence spending, which, as you know, is something that I have been talking about for a long time. And now with John Healey as the Chancellor of the Exchequer, I really hope that we're going to see some movement in this domain.
And does Britain benefit from this AI drone technology partnership? Because we've heard that Putin has said something along the lines of UK will pay for getting involved in this way.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the classic words of a playground bully. But look, yes, the UK are absolutely going to benefit from this. You know, we know now that Ukraine are at the forefront of drone technology. They have a lot more knowledge about this than we do. So being able to understand and share this information is going to be really incredibly helpful for us to build our armed forces.
And if defence spending needs to increase, where should that extra money come from?
Yeah, so what we've been talking about for a long time now is having cross-party talks so we can actually all come together and find a way that we can actually get to 2.5% by 2027 and 3% in the next parliament. We haven't seen those cross-party talks yet, but I think that's the way forward. And in the same way that, you know, Andy Burnham is trying to do that in social care, I think and I hope that, you know, he would also try this route for defence spending as well.
Moving on to Epsom and St Helier Hospital. Now, I know a couple of months ago you welcomed £57 million for St Helier's A&E. How significant is this investment?
Oh, it's absolutely really so important for the A&E because obviously they needed more capacity, more space there. So now this is really going to help the hospital. And this is particularly because the specialist emergency care hospital is going to take, you know, beyond 2030 to be built. So we need that capacity now. So it's absolutely vital that this is here. And both St Helier and the staff, you know, are really delighted to have this.
And what will this £57 million actually change for patients using A&E?
Well, ultimately, there'll be some additional capacity for A&E. So, I guess ultimately that will hopefully reduce wait times. But again, as I said, it's going to be there to provide that support and that additional space in A&E until we get the new hospital built, which again is something that I've been campaigning for a long time. And, we hope that it will get built sooner rather than later.
And does this funding finally feel like the government has listened?
Quite frankly, I don't think they had a choice. I think they had to do something. It does feel like they've listened, but there's a lot more to do, and that's the challenge, and ultimately, St Helier needs to be rebuilt. We do need another hospital. It's falling apart. It's a hospital that predates the NHS, and you've already got buildings there that are condemned. I've previously spoken about leaky roofs and windows that are stuck together with sticking tape and lifts that don't work properly, etc. So it's vital that we ultimately do get the new hospital.
Brilliant. Moving on to housing and infrastructure. Epsom and Yule needs more homes, but is there enough infrastructure to support them?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, one of the things that we have been talking for a long time now as Liberal Democrats is making sure that the infrastructure is thought about at the same time, but it's also promised and delivered at the same time. So as Liberal Democrats, we have recently announced a new policy around GP surgeries, for example, which is to make sure that to ask if community infrastructure levy can be used to support not just a site for a new GP, but also the salary of a new GP, because this is one of the critical things that we find that people talk about when there is new homes, that there's a lack of GPs, maybe there's a lack of buses, etc. And normally what happens is the houses are built first and then the infrastructure comes later. That absolutely can't continue to happen. We need to make sure that everything comes together at the same time.
Excellent. Now, Thames Water customers face higher bills despite ongoing pollution. Are customers being asked to pay too much, do you think?
Well, this is a really good question, and I was just on the phone with Thames Water yesterday, and one of the things they're telling me is that they don't have sufficient money, to cover all of the repairs and everything they want to do, and obviously Ofwat will limit the amount that they can increase their bills. Now, ultimately, we as a party think that right now, quite frankly, Thames Water needs to go into special administration. They haven't managed the water infrastructure as well as they could have done. That absolutely needs to change. And what we can't see is bills continually going up and going up because Thames Water needs more money. At the same time, they're paying shareholders and executives are continuing to get bonuses. I mean, that just doesn't add up in a cost of living crisis as well. I have constituents that are coming to me and saying, enough is enough, and understandably. And I think the challenges this summer is that on the one hand, you have Thames Water, who has issued a hosepipe ban. We all understand why. But at the same time, there's been an unprecedented amount of leaks, and I understand, that the dry weather has caused that. But while they're seeing sort of, water coming out of the pipes onto the streets, they're being asked to, conserve water. So understandably, customers are frustrated and they shouldn't be paying the price for Thames Water's failures.
And touching on the Hogsmill, that runs through Yule, you've campaigned on pollution there. How confident are you it will actually be cleaned up?
Well, the Hogsmill is a obviously it's a chalk stream river. It's a precious river. I've been campaigning on it for a while. It is fairly clean, and obviously with the Chamber Mead wetland that was built not so long ago, that's really helped increase the cleanliness of the river. And actually, it wasn't that long ago that I released voles into the river, and that was absolutely wonderful to see that happen. The main thing is that we've got to make sure that the storm overflows that are on the Hogsmill don't continue to overflow. And part of that is investment in infrastructure, and we need to make sure that Thames Water are absolutely investing in the infrastructure so that when we have these massive downpours and the systems can't cope, that it's not the Hogsmill and obviously the River Mole as well, that's also in the constituency, that suffer as a result of this.
Brilliant. And final topic is vehicle thefts in the area. Now, Surrey had 1,551 vehicle thefts last year, but only 2.19% resulted in a charge. Why is the detection rate so low?
That's a really good question, and it's something that I've been talking to the police about and trying to understand exactly what is going on. Because I think the real challenge here is that ultimately, people in Surrey are paying the price, And this isn't just a small petty crime. It affects people's lives. You know, people need their cars to get to work. So it's absolutely vital that we get on top of this. Now, fundamentally, the police, they can only work with the resources that they're being given, and neighbourhood policing has been stripped back for years. So one of the things that we've been talking about is not only restoring community policing, but I think there really needs to be some sort of like specialist team based at the National Crime Agency that can bring together all of this data from the ANPR cameras, insurance records, intelligence from police forces and other organisations to make sure that we can target organised car crime networks that are, you know, the cause of many of these car thefts.
As you've mentioned, you're calling for better neighbourhood policing and a specialist team. What's one change that you'd make first?
Yeah, so we want to get more police on the beat. I think it's really important that there's a real visible deterrence, you know, because I think having that deterrence on the ground means that, you know, reports can be acted upon quickly. And that also, you know, all the police forces are obviously working together to make sure that any of this information is passed on as quickly as possible. And, you know, as I said, this is something that affects people's lives. Not having a car means that, you know, maybe you can't see your grandma, you can't go to work. It has a massive impact, and it's something that this government really needs to get on top of.
And just very briefly, it's been in the news this week that Harry and Meghan are making a return to the UK. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think people are bored of the royal drama?
I think I'm going to stay out of royal politics. You know, it's great to see that Harry and Meghan want to come back. And if they want to, you know, continue their lives here and their kids to be educated here, that's great. And, you know, let's see what they get involved in the UK.